Welcome to another episode of Masked Monologues, the anonymous podcast dedicated to creatives. Each week, I dive into conversations with a diverse array of creatives from various industries to explore their unique processes and stories. If you're enjoying the show and want to support us, please consider leaving a review or sharing it with a friend.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I am joined by Rory Launder. He's going to tell us a bit about himself and what he does. Would you mind introducing yourself, Rory?
My name is Rory Launder, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. And I've spent about 6 months now ever since the release of a book that was made my life story. And I've been spending the majority of my time speaking to crowds, whether they be small or large, and sharing my journey from homelessness, addiction, and now today living with stage 4 lung cancer. And I'm really focusing on the perseverance and my dedication to continuing on and continuing the fight and not let any of this stuff define me as I move still in a forward direction in life.
Now, I would love to speak a little bit about your story and your book. Can you tell me why you decided to write the story and how you started out as a writer?
So the story was very unique how it came to be. I actually co-authored, so I didn't directly write the story, and I believe that's what makes it so authentic and real and pure. And what happened, somewhat sadly, is when I was diagnosed with cancer, I had been approached by a teacher at a local school called the ALC, the Alternative Learning Center. It's the school where kids have either had trouble in high school, they've had trouble with learning, or they've had drugs, or maybe they're pregnant, or they just had a real rough go at life, and they're just not getting along in public school. And here in Minnesota, they end up in the what they call the ALC, which still gives them a chance to do what they need to do. So as a person in recovery in our community, I've been taught many years ago that you go out and you share your story and you share the message and you talk about addiction and you talk about, it's kind of part of staying sober. It was one of the tactics that we've learned that it seems to work when other things don't, is by doing that, by not getting out of ourselves and helping in the community. So I was only doing as I was told for many years. But again, when I was diagnosed with cancer, this specific teacher, Sweta Petit, who was a teacher at the local ALC in our community and where she had been for 13 years, got a hold of me and said, Rory, you've been coming in our school for 5-6 years speaking, and we're just floored on how these kids respond to your story, that you came to Rochester homeless, living in the streets with no family. I actually ended up purchasing that same laundromat 13 years later and turning it into a $1 million business. So as I spent 5 years going in the schools and telling the kids about this, they would look at me and they'd think, oh my God, this guy did this. It's got to be BS. And they'd see my name on the big bulletin board outside the business. And they're like, oh my God. And I think the depth of it was they couldn't argue with it. Here's a guy in front of them that's real. That's not college graduate or a person that's educated in this field, which I'm grateful for, but I'm a real live person that lived in the streets, homeless, hopeless, and I turned my life around. And so it inspired these kids. It lifted them up. It gave them hope and gleams in their eyes. And this teacher, the Sweta Patel, she'd call me and she'd send me emails and messages. And she said, Rory, these kids are reacting. They're responding to what you say. One kid, James, he's been here 2 years. He's never lifted up a pencil. One time, and the last time you came to speak and left, he filled out the whole sheet about what they got out of my little speaking and how they could relate and this and that. There's, you know, a little small sheet with 4 questions. And she was all excited. She said, James filled out the whole sheet. We've never seen him pick up a pencil. And she said, I think there's something to your story. There's something to it. And again, when I got diagnosed with cancer, she said, you know what? I think I'm supposed to write your story. I think she was being very kind. But I think inside she thought, hey, he might die here soon. And I want to get what I can because we can use this to continue to help these kids. It's unbelievable what happened. I have to almost stay humble to just realize what happened. So in the last 5 months, she wrote this story, my story of my life, my homelessness, my fight with addiction, how I deal with cancer today. And she made it into a book. She wasn't sure how she was going to do it. And what she found as she spent about 2.5 years meeting me every Saturday, she found that as she was listening to me, she was hearing these lessons and things that I was learning, the things that I learned in life that helped me to change, to help me become the man that I am today. And she started using some of those tactics and ideas and thoughts and inspirations and whatnot in her personal teaching career. And she took them into the classroom and she came to me and she said, Rory, I'm starting to have success with these kids that we couldn't even get through to. And they're listening. There's all kinds of chapters in this book, simple things like sometimes the people that the hard cases, like these people that are struggling and they're really a drug addict or whatever. I've always looked at it as sometimes those hard cases or those people that are the worst off. The way I've grown now to understand it is that I think those people need the most help. And those people need the most love. That's not the ones that we should be giving up on. Like those people need it the most. Little lessons about trying to learn to walk with our head up and not, we start to carry the baggage of life and all our sins and problems and bad choices and stuff we do. And we start to walk hunched over and we're embarrassed and ashamed. And then we get this mentality in our head, and especially our younger generation, the high schoolers, of I can't, and I won't, and I never will. And I would tell the teachers, you bring them to my business and you give me 20 minutes. And at one point they did, they started bringing them right to my business, to my showroom on three occasions specifically, I can tell you. And I sat with these kids and I'd tell them with all my heart what I went through in my life. And sometimes they'd show emotion, some they wouldn't, but something would happen in those couple minutes. And maybe it was a moment of clarity. Maybe it was a spot of inspiration. Maybe I was just a guy that they couldn't argue with. So they listen and they go about their day. And many of these kids today, I see them 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, and they're a manager in a restaurant or they're running. And it's unbelievable to see that sometimes if you just take a second and treat people like they're a human being, take a minute for someone that's struggling, that's in a bad place, especially if you've got a good life. If your life's pretty good and you got a roof over your head and some food in the fridge. And in our world today, because it is so broken, if you can spend a little bit of time every week or a couple minutes or whatever and just do something to help someone else, even if it's something small, because it was those little things. It was these moments and these relationships that I had with people that helped lift me up and make me feel like a person again and make me feel part of. And it changed my life. I didn't have to stay going down that same road, doing the same stuff that I'd done for so many years. I had an addiction to cocaine, crack cocaine, and I chased that addiction for 17 years. For 17 years, I lived in and out of shelters and in the streets and homeless and never maintained a job, never maintained a relationship with another human being for any long period of time. It was a hard way to live. And so many times people have asked me, some of the places I speak, I've been fortunate to be in events now in the last few months where there's sometimes 400, 500, 600, 700 people, huge events. And I never dreamed of any of this. This was never part of the plan. We never had an agenda. We figured we're going to write this book and maybe we can help more kids in the schools. And now it's sold in 5 countries. It's actually sold in your country, in Canada. We've sold a couple of books in Canada because we see it on Amazon. And yeah, we've sold on Kindle. It came out on audiobook 2 weeks ago. Blown away what's happened with this and how quick things are happening. And again, we never planned any of it. And people ask us, how much is it? And they said, you can sell books for $17.99 or $10 on Amazon. We're like, $10. We want to sell them for $10. So we have no interest in making money. The world, and I want to say it like that, because at this point, since we've sold in other countries, I think it's fair I get to say that now. But the world is responding to the story. And it's not that it's about me. It's about the stuff that's happened. And it's about the relationship between Sweet and I. And I always continue to tell people, it's not that I'm special and I know something great or anything. That is not at all what it is. But the story in this book is touching people everywhere around the world. And daily, we get responses on Messenger, Facebook, Instagram of people, how they're blown away, how it's helped them or helped their family or helped.
I want to ask now, so you said you were someone who started off homeless, you were in homeless shelters, and you were addicted to cocaine for 17 years. I want to know if someone else is in a position that's similar to yours, or maybe it's not identical, maybe they're not addicted to cocaine, maybe it's not alcohol addiction. Let's say maybe they're pregnant or maybe they're in some other compromised situation where they're just feeling down in the dumps. How do you change your life and completely turn your life around so that you can be the person that you've always wanted to be, the person that you've dreamt of being? What did you do in your life? Because as someone who's addicted to cocaine on the streets to creating a $1 million business, there is a big jump there. There's a leap. And I'm wondering if it was more gradual steps that you took every day to get a bit better, or if you had this one life-changing moment, you had an epiphany where you thought, you know what, I'm going to change everything. How did it work for you?
For me, it was over time. I had to stub my toe and trip over the curb and make mistakes and continue. The biggest thing for me, and it's a very simple answer for me, others may differ. I got miserable enough. It got bad enough, and I had enough pain for so long. It wasn't one certain moment, like you said, epiphany. I did fall on the floor in tears and crumbling. And I remember being on my knees down in the county jail and crying and weeping. And it's just like, I can't do this anymore. And I almost felt almost like giving up because I felt I either got to do something different or I can't do this anymore. It was over time, but I had these people. And that's the biggest thing. I think when we try and go about and do life on our own, in my experience, it doesn't always go well. The thing is to find someone or some person or something that you can connect with. And eventually, sometimes they'll become a mentor or whatnot, but someone that's relatable. And that's where I think my story can be relatable just because of the simple things, like you said. It's not whether it's cocaine or it could be pregnancy, alcohol, whatever, but it's about the misery. It's about being alone. It's about the addiction. It's about the insanity of the cycle of get up to get more drugs to do this, or being someone that's a young teen that's pregnant and fearful and doesn't know what they can do and they feel alone and maybe they don't have a good relationship with their parents and they don't know what to do. And finding, I think, another woman or finding a person in here in the U.S., there's tons of places in our community, especially in Rochester, Minnesota. There's the Family Service of Rochester. There's the Landing. There's all kind of county help. There's so many different little places and meetings and recovery places that finding those mentorships and finding those relationships with other people that are safe and healthy that can help you. And that's the thing. Try something different, because I think in any vicious cycle, it gets, when we get in that circle of some type of a cycle, it's hard to break free of that because we get comfortable. Believe it or not, I think even with the addict or the alcoholic, they actually get comfortable with it. So over time, it's not, oh, I feel uncomfortable. You become numb to it. And then I think it's where it becomes the disease, where it's repetition. You get up to work to get a little bit of money, to get more drugs or alcohol, to go run home and drink it and hide. And then you're stuck in this cycle. The business, when you ask second part being, how was I able to come from homelessness and living in the streets with no family? I got to share that with you. My family had died in my early 20s. So here I was, almost a 40-year-old man. So I had no family, no mother, no father, no brother, no best friend, no grandpa. All had passed away. But what I did is I speak really strongly on this one. So people say, how were you able to start a $1 million business? And I said, you know what? I took my skills, my abilities, my hustle, in a sense, even sometimes the scamming, all of the stuff that I did to get high in my addiction. That's the thing. Addicts and alcoholics and people that come from where I come from, they're the strongest, most go-getter, able to delegate, able to organize, to maintain a drug or alcohol addiction and hide it, do this and give money and manage money and do all this. There's a bunch of skill involved. There literally is. And to maintain a drug addiction like that for a while, I took a lot of my energy and my abilities that I used in my addiction and I applied them to something positive in this world. I found that I loved construction. I loved working on homes. I like taking old crappy homes and making them beautiful. And I put all my energy into that. The energy that I spend, people tell you stories. I drank for, or I was doing methamphetamines for 13 days straight and didn't sleep. We get out in the world and we work 4 days a week and that's all I'm going to ever do and nothing more. Yet when we were addicts, we were putting in 70 hours a week, chasing drugs, hustling for money, doing all this. So we've shown that we have all of these abilities. And once I could figure out how to take those abilities and put them into something right and positive, something that's going to benefit society, something that's an asset to this world instead of being a defect, and seeing what I can take out of life and instead try and contribute, my complete life changed. I was speaking at a place yesterday and I said, one of my dreams was to be a part of the community and see if I could do something nice before or close after I was diagnosed with cancer. I'd made the decision to sell my business because I didn't think I would be here much longer. Stage 4 lung cancer is usually a pretty bad deal. And non-small cell carcinoma, and it had spread all through my body. It was 4 different tumors. My doctors, they're like, they never gave me a date, but you could tell that. And the more you look on your phone and go online, it's tops. I have 2 to 3 years. So I sold my business. And people ask me, did you regret selling your business? And I said, I don't. I didn't know that I'd still be here. So the miracle for me today is I'm 4 years now since I was diagnosed. April 24th of 2020, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And here I am over 4 years later. My health continues. I continue to have clear scans. And so I try and give back. My dream was I wanted to be part of the community. So I wanted to sponsor things and do stuff. my final year of owning my business, I had race cars that raced on dirt tracks that had my logo on the side of their cars. I had hockey teams, t-ball, baseball, soccer, everything you can imagine in our community. I sponsored the police benevolent, the sheriff's country. So here I was, this guy that was homeless in our community that came here with nothing, that got loved by this community, got lifted up, got put in treatment. They fed me, they gave me clothes. And now here I'm giving back 13 years later when I own my business. I'm sponsoring all the events and all this stuff. The same guy that stood in front of the gas station asking people for a dollar when they come out, hey, do you have some change? Let me get a dollar, trying to get money off them. And then my name's up on bulletin boards. I tell people, like, I can't make this shit up. This is unbelievable. You can change. And you don't have to live stuck in the rut of whatever it is you're going through. If you have faith, you got to believe in yourself. You can change. And whatever happened in your past, people carry that with them. They can tell when you talk to people and you look in their eyes, you can see the pain in their eyes. I can see the damage or the scarring in their eyes. I like to look at people and tell them, you don't have to let that define you. And you can decide how the story ends. There's time left. And someone once boldly looked at me and said, Rory, you have time left. What are you going to do with it? And the guy was really harsh with me. This is the time you got to quit talking about the past. What are you going to do today? And he'd always knock me into shape a little bit. And I'm very grateful for that person.
How would you, looking back, prevent yourself from going down that road? This is advice for, I know a lot of young men, a lot of young adolescent boys usually tend to go to drugs, whether they're in a state of crisis, and some are even suicidal. How do you prevent yourself from going down that path? And looking back, what would be some things that you might have changed?
I think if someone that I seriously knew and trusted had looked me in the eye and said how bad it was, the problem was, and I'm just being honest here, is that nobody did. Now you hear about fentanyl overdoses in these high schools. They're burying 6-7 kids a year, and all the kids are hearing about it. When I started out in 1973, 84, 85, you weren't hearing about that happening. It wasn't, and so I wasn't as intimidated or whatever. Adults were doing cocaine, and people were taking a hit of acid. You heard maybe someone had a bad trip, but they hung with them, and then they got through it. But I didn't hear about that. To answer your question, in this day and age, it's about letting people know that, hey, putting fentanyl in cocaine, methamphetamines, they're putting it in everything. Now someone said they're putting it on weed. So all it takes is 1 second of one day. Then you could be just maybe taking a hit off a joint or doing something, but you don't know where you're getting. Do you know where you're buying it? Do you know who that person is? Do you know that it's okay? Because I have friends that the marijuana has become legal here in the U.S. and they're like, oh, but it's cool and it's legal and I buy it from. But how do you know for sure the source? How do you know that it's okay? What could I do to not do it? I don't think we really, truly, any person has a mental defense. Sometimes people are suicidal, so they're more apt to get into it or they feel left out. There's also just the peer pressure. You're out at a party, you're 15 and your two best friends do a line and you're sitting there. And then you end up doing one just because they are. You weren't even anticipating it. You just don't want to feel different. So I think having a true person that you believe and have faith in or you respect telling you, hey, this situation is not like in the high schools when I speak, I tell these kids, I said, it's not a if thing. It's not if it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's a when thing. It's when is it going to happen? So when it does happen, what are you going to do? Play it out in your mind. Oh, hey, I got to go. Because if you have any goals or dreams or things that you want to achieve in life, that 1 second, that one little bump or whatever, that situation, if you're not prepared for it, it could change your life. And if you truly have dreams and goals in life and you want to reach them, these are things that you have to prepare yourself for. So when the time comes, not if, when that time comes, you already have an out. And I tell these kids, it sounds weird, but practicing a little sentence, oh, hey, no, my mom was just texting me. I got to get going. Sorry, maybe next time. Run your ass out of there. There shouldn't be a first time. I know when I was growing up, weed was addictive and things like that. It wasn't really frowned on too much. But nowadays, you have fentanyl, you have heroin, the opioid epidemic. You have these drugs that don't even mirror the drugs we had in my era. And I just can't imagine these poor kids. But here in the U.S., it's prevalent in the school system. They're everywhere in every school system, whether it's suburbia or inner city. That used to differentiate them. Not anymore. Not in the U.S., not in Minnesota. There's drugs in every high school. It doesn't even matter where it is. And that's what our kids are up against. So I think letting them hear people, I think, that have experienced it and being honest with them, not quoting stuff. Oh, it'll be okay. I think we got to go a little deeper and really look at these kids. And maybe it's a little bit like scared straight, getting up there and get crazy. But that's also, I think, fine, because they need to know the truth. Our younger generation, they're super intelligent. I think people way underestimate our younger generation. They know when someone's lying to them. They know when someone's coming from a platform where they haven't been there and they don't truly know, but they're trying to preach it. I believe that our kids, these days, they know that difference. And so having someone that really knows, that speaks, that's the game changer. That's what's going to help them, because from my experience, just the last 5 months, I've had kids come up to me from these high schools. It's unbelievable. And I know all I did. And again, I don't think that I'm smart. I absolutely don't think I have anything figured out at all. But I know this. I got a story that's raw and real, and I'm willing to share it and continue to be raw and real and authentic. And it shakes them right in their feet, right out of their chair. So I think that's the gift in it.
My last question is, did you ever repeat any sentences in your mind or have any sayings that encouraged you to keep persevering, especially when it was difficult to abstain from consuming drugs, when it was difficult to progress in life? Did you repeat anything in your head, or how did you go about it from day to day? Because I know it can be exceedingly difficult when you're addicted to something to say no to it. So I'm wondering how you said no to it and just kept going with it and didn't fall back into that vicious cycle.
I played it out. And I tell people that. It's, you know what? Play it out. Play it out. Okay, you go and you have one little drink. That becomes 14. And now you missed work and you're calling them late at noon. They're wondering where you are. Now your girlfriend or boyfriend or significant other is mad at you. You also, now you yourself, you let down. Here's the bigger one. It's not even about the people around you. Now you feel less than again. You feel like a failure. You feel like you let yourself down. All that self-doubt, all that mental health in our head stuff, now that's all kicked up. And so I would play it out. You know what I've done a lot in my life, and this is going to be a little weird, but I told you when we started this, I'm going to be honest with you. Through my journey, there were people that said things very negative to me. And one of them was, oh, you ain't never going to be nothing but a crackhead. You ain't never going to change. And sometimes when I'd be in those difficult times in business, for whatever reason, I would hear those voices. You ain't never going to be nothing. And so I fought hard. And I'm like, you want to bet that I'm not going to be nothing? You watch. I had 23 employees working for me. And the majority of them were also recovering addicts or drug people. And they were doing better and trying to change their lives. It was amazing. It grew into something wonderful. I found power in that negativity, however that can be explained. Some of those negative things that people told me and said to me, maybe because I didn't want them to be right, so I fought harder and I tried harder. That came up often during times of harshness. And then I do believe in a higher power. I believe in a spirituality. And at times I would reach to my higher power, say a little prayer, say the serenity prayer, small things like that. But I'm not a super religious person, so I have to be careful with that. I don't want to say that I'm something that I'm not, but I find my higher power spiritual. I can go out in the woods and look at eagles and trees, and I can just be at peace with myself and have a faith that I have some, there's something up there that's got my back. So I get a little confidence from that.
Thank you so much. I want to thank you for coming on to this podcast and sharing your story. I'm wondering if anyone wants to contact you, they want to visit your website, they want to get in touch, where's the best place to reach you?
They can reach us at our website, which is www.com, or if they're interested in me speaking or just following me a little bit on where I can be reached at Rory, RoryLonder, speaker, SPEAKER. On Facebook.
Thank you so much. Please leave a review or share it with a friend or family member. And we hope to see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Masked Monologues. Don't forget to like and subscribe. See you next time.